This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome this to the November 17th edition of Invest Talk, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. And I really do mean that. The effort here on the show is to try to make you a better investor, better than average. That means a bit more education. That means becoming more knowledgeable about the market. And of course, this is a two-way conversation. I want to thank everybody last night, by the way, for coming to the Wealth Webinar. We had a pretty big turnout, and I do appreciate that. And the Wealth Webinar was entitled How to Find Income and Value in an Overpriced Market, which is not so easy in this market. But we gave you some tools and some methods to determine what value is for a marketplace, and then how to find, and using the internet, how to find those value and income positions we are all looking for. So hopefully, I'm hoping it helped. I really do. If you had a question last night, you can always bring them to my attention now. If you want to call the show, just go to. You can also send me an email. You can just and to do that, you go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve and send me an email. I try very hard to answer all my emails. Everyone's invited to use the 24-hour listen line for now for any of your questions. We can talk live during this hour, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. Or you can leave your questions on the same number, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we're going to get to that in a minute. If you want a quick look summary of the week in the market and economy, you got to just open our premium newsletter in your inbox. We send it out each Friday. If you're not a subscriber, I encourage you to give it a try. The first section is always the market conditions, and I talked about the pickup in volatility we saw this week. And I also said that the market today, Friday, because I send this out early in the morning, so I right at the opening of the market is when I finish it. And I said today was going to be the day that will determine if the market was up or down for the week, and it looked like at that opening that it was going to be a weaker day to me. And, of course, it did turn out that way. But I talk about the inflation data out. I talk about some of the economic numbers that were released and how they might affect things. Talked about Warren Buffett. Now, I had someone call me or write me and say, well, gee, the Berkshire Hathaway, it was up more than I said it was. And I said, well, I sent the article I was reading from that said Berkshire Hathaway is up 1.6% for the year. I'm just going, it was on Market Watch. Article written by Jeremy Owen. So I mentioned that in the newsletter. In the stock idea section, I give you two ideas about this, what to invest or put it on your watch list at least. Portfolio management, I talked about diversification and why it's important, how it's important, and how to maintain diversification. And what does it really mean? Consumer Watch, I read this article about scams for Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving e-cards, a scam using an e-card. And it was perpetuating email. And it's a scam, and it was pretty interesting. So I mentioned that, and I thought that was something I should share with everybody. If you'd like to subscribe, it's $10 a month. You can try it for a month. You get four issues, one every week, every Friday. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. Now it's time to go to the 24-hour listen line. Check for questions. Here's one that came in before today's program.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Hari Vatim. I'm calling from Mason, Ohio. I'm a recent subscriber to your podcast, and I've listened to many episodes. Find it very informative, so thank you for what you do. My question is around the Bank of America warrants. These are the warrants, the A-type warrants, which were issued by the TARP back from the financial crisis. So I've happened to purchase a fairly sizable chunk of these back at a price of around $3. And from what I understand by going through the website, that the exercise price of these warrants have been coming down, and they are close to about $12 or between 12 and 13 today. So the question really is, should I at this point try to exercise some of these warrants in exchange for the Bank of America stock, which is trading around $27, $28 a share? Or should I just wait since these I do have time till January 2019 to exercise these warrants? So I appreciate your feedback and look forward to listening to the answer in the show. Thank you.
Okay, well, for everybody else, a warrant is the right to buy a stock, okay? You can buy, not every stock have warrants, but a warrant is the right to buy a stock within a certain period of time at a certain price. You might think, well, that sounds like an option. Well, it kind of does. But they're usually longer term in nature. He says he has warrants that he can exercise and buy a stock at $12, $13, and it is selling at $26. Then warrants expire in 2019. I would suggest that you exercise at least half of them, okay, and buy the stock. Buy the stock. And then I would sell half those positions I bought and lock in some profits. And then, I don't know where the market's going to go. I didn't tell you that the Bank of America has done well. I can also tell you that Warren Buffett just entered a position of Bank of America last quarter, so he likes it. So I would start exercising, but I'd probably start with half and then see what happens. Of course, the market could correct and come down, and it could do anything it wants. But you don't want to, you got till 2019. It's now 2017. We're approaching 2018. You got a little over a year, maybe a year and a half. I'm not sure what date you said in 2019. So you got to start exercising them, and you got a double in your price now. So I would do it. I would exercise half. That's what I would probably do. I just take a cautious approach. And then I don't want you to hold on to too much of Bank of America stock. So, depending on the size of your portfolio, and, you want to hold on to about 3 to 5% of Bank of America in your portfolio. So whatever that would equate in the number of shares. Let's look at our list of topics today. Sometimes the mutual funds versus ETF debate misses the larger point. It's going to be one of our talking points, mutual funds versus ETFs and the debate about it and why don't stress over that. Why? We're going to talk about that. Renting is better than owning to build wealth. This was a study done by Florida Atlantic University. I thought I'd share that with you. How to find your passion in retirement. How to find it. And a Harvard professor of economics, and a pretty well-known guy, Martin Feldstein, said that the Fed needs to raise interest rates fast, and it would destroy $9.5 trillion in value, but they still need to do it. Well, we'll have to explore that, don't we? We'll talk about that. So that's what we're going to discuss. Today, the market was down. The Dow was down 100, the NASDAQ down 11, the S&P down 7. And so that means for the last 2 weeks, the market has been down, but not that strong. It's not like it's, whoa, we're down 2, 3% in 2 weeks. No, probably about a percent or two. Very, very mild so far. It feels like the same mildness we had in August. Do you remember that? Where for the whole month of August, the market was down. But it wasn't, I think the most it was down about 3% from its high. So we'll see. We'll see how this plays out. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, wrapping up this week before Thanksgiving. That's right. Next week is Thanksgiving. Oh, my favorite holiday. Think you can just pick up a big brand name company and then it'll be okay? Consider Lehman Brothers. They were big. How about WorldCom? They're big. How about General Motors that went out of business? They filed bankruptcy, remember? Conseco, Chrysler, all these companies. They were big. So you can't just, you know, buy a big company and think it's going to be fine. Join us now, 888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to Steve in Oakland. How you doing, Steve?
Hey, Steve. How's it going?
Steve, you there?
You on again.
Good.
Earlier this week, I called you about General Electric, and you told me that I was, you know, catching a falling knife, and I did, you know, buy into this as I saw the dip. So I'm trying to be extra cautious this time. Today, I'm calling about the stock Priceline. Priceline had a huge dip, and instead of buying it, I've noticed that it's having a gradual trend upward. And I wanted your thoughts.
Okay, Priceline is very expensive. It did have a big drop. Was that probably earnings? Was that the problem
with
the
drop?
Yeah.
Yes, it was earnings.
Okay. Okay. PCLN is the symbol. Priceline, everybody. I think most people know what it is, but okay, how come that's not working? Come on. There you go. Provides airline ticket, hotel room rental, all that kind of stuff. You know, if you've seen the Priceline commercials, it's a pretty high price stock of $1,747. So they don't split their stock. They're going to make $83 a share next year after making $74 a share, and that's a 12% or 13% increase. And sales growth is around 20%. So it's got some good numbers, and I'm saying this is a pretty decent price. Even the stock price itself is $1,747. Most people say, well, that's an expensive stock. It's not that expensive when you compare it to the earnings. It's not cheap, but it's not that expensive. It's on the lower end of its range and has a huge return on equity. So it's a good blue chip, big blue chip stock, Steve. And, you know, it dropped below its 200-day moving average 2 weeks ago with that bad earnings, and now it's been trying to work itself up. I would give you a green light for maybe a half a position here because it's still below the 200-day moving average. Still below the 200-day moving average. On a long-term basis, that's kind of a negative, but it looks like it put it in the bottom. It looks like it has. Okay.
Okay.
And it looks like it's done. It looks like it's done falling because it's moved up and for what? 7, 8, 9 days in a row now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 days in a row. It's moved up from that fall.
Right. Okay? I saw that.
Steve. I think it's a good. It's a good long-term hold. Good blue chip kind of stock. I think it's good.
All right. Great. Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. No problem. Let's go to Art. Art wants to talk about Teva, our favorite stock to hate in the drug industry. How you doing, Mart?
Good. How's it going, Steve?
Oh, Art. Can I hold you over? We're I'm up against a break, and you know I don't want to give you a short change on your question. So if you mind holding, I appreciate that.
Sure.
This is the Mess Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. I welcome your money questions. We talk live right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Or you can use the number off hours, the same number all the time, 888-99-CHART. Okay, I appreciate it, Art. Are you still there?
Still here.
Okay, so, Teva, go ahead and ask.
I've been waiting to possibly pick some up. I've noticed it's gone up probably the last few days, and it's up probably about 20%, I think.
Yeah, it's popped up. It's really
what's your thoughts for?
So it's popped up pretty strong the last 3 days, and it looks like it put in a bottom because it traded sideways for about 2 weeks or so. And then had that move up. And it was because I saw a couple of articles saying that it's way below its intrinsic value. I mean, this stock is selling right now today at a third of its book value. So I think what you're seeing is deep value investors thinking it's time to pick this thing up. So if you wanted to buy it, Art, this would be a good place to buy it. And what you could do is at $13.84, everybody else, Teva is a pharmaceutical company, largest, world's largest generic drug maker. They're going to make $3.82 this year, but that's down from $5 last year. And next year, it's only going to make $3. So it's going down. But sales have been picking up. You know, they're still growing. So it's awful inexpensive with a PE of 3 right now. So
return. The loans that they have, does that concern you at all?
The loans, the debt they have?
Yes.
No, it doesn't, because that's one of the reasons they cut their dividend. Their dividend was like 5%. They cut it in half, and what they're going to do is take that money and pay down debt. And then they also have very good cash flow. I mean, $5.63 cash flow per share. They can handle their debt, and that's what they're going to work on. And that will only make the company stronger in the future. But we're just not sure. Remember, they just got a new CEO. They still have problems, but the value of the company is pretty cheap. It's, you know, the value is pretty high compared to the price of the stock. So,
okay.
This will be the place
actually, when they got the CEO announced, it popped up like 30%. So hopefully the CEO, you know, puts a positive spin on things, I guess. But we'll see.
Hopefully he can turn it around. And that's our hope. And this is, so it's still a risk, but it's less of a risk right now.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks, Art. Appreciate the call. 888-99-CHART. So, you know, everybody has been moving massively to ETFs and away from mutual funds. And the question is that a good idea, bad idea? Well, one of the reasons why they move massively away from mutual funds is they've moved toward cheaper index funds, and that's been the ETFs. And it was, we talked a little bit about it last night on the webinar. Whereas there's a ton of money poured into the ETFs, and there is no cushion. ETFs are fully 100% invested. Then you buy an ETF, they take that money, they go buy the stocks that the index has with that money. Whereas the mutual funds usually have a cash cushion. So when people start to sell and the stocks goes down, the mutual funds have a cushion of cash to pay to give back people the money, whereas the ETFs are always fully invested, so they immediately have to start selling to give back people's money if they want it. And that's not in normal times a problem, but we've never seen so many ETFs, so many index funds, billions upon billions of dollars, and if everybody heads for the exit at the same time, it's going to be ugly. So is it better to have a mutual fund or ETF? Well, not necessarily. Maybe that is not even what you should be concerned with. You know, it doesn't matter if you have an ETF or a mutual fund. It matters how you're managing your portfolio. How the type of assets in the portfolio and the way you structure it is much more important than whether you have an ETF or a mutual fund. That's kind of a non-question at that point. So it depends on what kind of investor you are, what kind of equities you want to own to achieve and match the investor you are. Are you looking for income? Are you looking for stability? Are you looking for growth? You want to be defensive? What is it? And you can use ETFs or mutual funds, either instruments or a combination of both, to achieve that goal. That's all. It's not rocket science. It just takes work. I keep telling people that. You know, you can do it yourself, and that's one of the reasons for the show. We'll try to help you teach you how to do it yourself. But you do have to put in the work. You do have to put in the time. And if you have the interest, it doesn't feel like work. It's kind of interesting, kind of fun. I like it. I've been doing it for years, and I really enjoy it. So anyway, so that's our main talking point. Before the end of the show, though, I want to talk about a couple other things about that Harvard economics professor who says that the Fed has to dramatically raise rates to 4% by 2019, by the way. He put a date on that. I'll give you the details. Also, renting is better than owning, according to a recent study for you millennials who are not buying yet but are thinking about it. And by the end of the hour, by the end of the show, I'm hoping to get to how to find your passion in retirement, how to do it. when you retire. What are you going to do? Coming up on the next Invest Talk, when gold is not good as gold. That's next time. But what's your topic today? My direct line between 4 and 5 Pacific Time is 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial and a question. What is the major lesson that investors learned in 2008 when the market went south? Stop trying to time the market. How many people got out and stayed out waiting for that correction that never really came? Well, Steve and the staff at KPP Financial employ the latest investing technology, guided by years of experience in finding opportunity and moderating risk for their clients, investing right along with their clients. KPP didn't get out of the market. They were defensive, but they stayed with the market. Long term, that's the safest place to be, and that's the main lesson. If you'd like help with the ins and outs of today's market, look at the series of investment programs for all life situations from KPP Financial. When you're ready, just click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com. Now let's get back to the podcast. This is Invest Talk, 1 hour of financial news and perspective, where you can talk directly with a registered investment advisor. Bring your questions to Steve right now. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve and Justin, this is Todd calling from Galena, Illinois. I'm a loyal podcast listener, and I appreciate everything that you guys do for us. Your show, I think, is awesome. I got a question around how, you know, sometimes at the year end, you see a lot of people either for tax reasons or whatever, they try to take profit or loss by selling their stocks. And I was wondering, you know, that seems like that could create an opportunity for, you know, the little guys like me to come in and swoop up some stocks where they're being sold off, maybe at better prices. So I guess my first question, part of the question is, assuming that's true, if there's an opportunity, do you see that being like an opportunity going towards the end of this year? Like, are the conditions right for people to be maybe trying to cash in and sell off before the end of the year for tax reasons, or, you know, take losses? And I guess the other side of the question is are there certain types of stocks that usually go through that? Like, I wouldn't think like a dividend stock, like a good dividend stock would necessarily do that because people are just taking the dividends, but maybe like a growth stock. Somebody might, you know, back out of that for a little bit and then look to come in, you know, in the first quarter again after they're able to do their tax write-offs. So I hope that made sense. And again, I appreciate everything you guys do for us. Take care.
Okay, let's talk about tax loss selling, and that's what you're asking about. The market participants selling their losers by the end of the year so they can apply those to any gainers to offset any capital gains tax. So first you got to look at the market itself. In an up year like we have this year, there's a lot more stocks on the upside than on the downside, even though in recent months that hasn't been the case, or the market's been very narrow. But generally speaking, when the market is up, there's not that much selling because people don't, in other words, selling for tax purposes, because people don't want to incur capital gains. So they will try to sell their losers, and that's what you're trying to focus on, to offset any gains they may have. So you have to look at the stocks that have very good fundamentals but have gone down sharply for some other reason, and there would be your opportunities. And I can tell you for a fact, the opportunities, if they exist, are in value stocks, not growth stocks. Not this year. Last year, 2016, value stocks worked very well. This year, value stocks worked poorly, okay, where growth stocks worked very well. So if you're going to look for bargains, it's going to have to be on the value side of the market. And long-term, value works better than growth. But it's very difficult to try to spot bargains simply because they were tax loss sellers and people, that's what drove the stock price down. That's pretty difficult to find. You're not going to be able to play that game. And you can't play the game about, well, just buy the ones that paid their dividends and the stock gone down. It's not enough. to make it worth the effort that you would put into it. Just doesn't work over a long time. What works over a long period of time? Buy good, solid companies. Don't overpay for them. And you buy them by the value and hope that they're growing. They would like to see some growth, but doesn't have to have growth as long as they're really undervalued. Okay? Good question, though. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So there was a Harvard professor, economics professor. His name is Martin Feldstein. He's fairly noted economist. And he was speaking at the Cato Institute recently. And he says the market is in danger of seeing a $9.5 trillion in wealth disappearing over a short period of time. And the reason why he sees that, because he feels the Fed needs to raise the interest rate from where it is right now at 1% to 4% by 2019. So he's telling, and if that does that, the reason that will lose that much money in value in the market. Now he says that the QE caused or is causing excess risk taking, and we all kind of know that. And if that risk is to be withdrawn from the market, that's what needs to happen is a raising of interest rate to 4%, which would be a more normal raising rate, more normal rate. If that happened, that would reduce the PE ratio and cause about a 35 to 40% fall in stock prices. And we'd lose about 2% in our GDP. Now he says the reason why this will happen, this should happen, and why it would be healthy, because that's what he's talking about. He says this would be healthy because right now our financial system is very unstable and this would return it to stability. Why is it unstable? Because we are not at our norms. PE ratios, GDP to the stock market price, all these different things that we talked about last night of how to identify an overpriced market. He says those things are all stretched to the wrong side and they need to revert back to the mean. And if they did, this is what result, about a 35 to 40% fall in the stock market. Now that would be pretty painful. Now we saw a 45% drop in 2008. Obviously, if this happened, that certainly would throw us into a recession, I would think. Doesn't necessarily have to be a recession, but boy, losing 2% of our GDP, well, we're only at about 2.5%. I mean, that's a lot. So remember, the definition of recession, 2 quarters in a row of shrinking GDP. So it's not too hard to get there. Okay? I have a new day for our individual retirement views in San Jose. I will be there on December 6th. We'll get this date in before the holidays. That's my hope. That's what I want to do. Would you like to take advantage of this free portfolio checkup date? To get on the schedule for December 6th, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then portfolio review.
How much time should I have to spend to properly manage a retirement portfolio? Do I need a living trust? How much life insurance should I have? Should beginners start out with individual stocks or mutual funds? How much of my portfolio should be in dividend-paying stocks? All important questions. If you're looking for answers, you're welcome to ask the financial questions that are important to you right now. 888-99-CHART is our direct line.
Hi, my name is Adam. I'm calling from El Dorado Hills, California. I was calling with a question to a stock that I own. I bought it in March of 2016, and I'm up about 200% on it, roughly. Just knowing if I should get out or continue to ride it. The stock is ERF, Enerplus Corporation. Just would like to hear what your thoughts are on it. Thanks a lot. Love the show.
Okay, ERF is in Frank. That's Enerplus Corporation, headquarters out of Calgary, Canada. Canadian company engaged in oil and natural gas exploration production in Canada and the U.S. So it's an oil company. $2 billion oil company, which is a mid-cap company. It's going to make 86 cents this year and then 68 cents this year, next year. And that 86 cents is down from $1.72. A very erratic oil company as far as earnings. It lost $7 a share in 2015. 2014, it made $1.46. Very erratic earnings. So that means this is a pretty wild kind of company. Not a lot of debt, pretty low P.E. ratio because it's a $9.10 stock, but that's only because they're looking at 2016. They're looking backwards. Looking forward, the P.E. ratio is 10. Okay, well, maybe 11 because they're going to make 86 cents. But then if you look even further forward, they're going to make 68 cents. Now your P.E. is more like 15. Return on equity is pretty high. Cash flow is pretty good. Management doesn't own hardly any of the shares. That disturbs me. For me, this is too erratic of a company. Oil has been pretty high for the last year or so. And I'm thinking that, you know, the pressure would be on the downside rather than the upside for oil prices. And that would hurt this kind of company. And they're too erratic in their earnings. I would not buy this stock. I would not. ERF. ERF. 888-99-CHURT. How? Well, no, I'll go to that one last. There was a study. Renting is better than owning to build wealth. Now, there's a big if, the big caveat here. If you're disciplined enough to invest. Now, what it said, they're talking really addressing millennials. Millennials have not been buying homes very much. They've been postponing it. If you're looking to build up your nest egg, home ownership isn't really all it's cracked up to be, according to a recently published study by Florida Atlantic University. And basically, you can read the whole article, and I did, of course, because I'm a reader. I like reading. I read a lot. The old adage of if you don't buy your house, you're throwing your money away on rent. It's kind of changing because according to the study, that if you not spend so much money on rent and buy the house, that you then invest that difference, that money between the rent and owning the cost of owning the house. And over time, that investment will grow more than the value of the house. Now, I would like you to talk to people in San Francisco Bay Area, San Jose, all that area. Hey, guys, would owning a house have been better the last 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years? You made a fortune on your house. So isn't this study kind of ignoring the fact that it's all about location? If you were in the Midwest, this would probably be very, very true. In Southern California and the San Francisco Bay Area, this is not true. Now, so, it's all about location. And it also kind of ignores, it makes a passing tip of the hat to the emotions people go through and how they cannot save the money they save in buying a house versus renting. They don't save it, they spend it. So for them to say, well, all you do is just say, invest that money, well, no, a house kind of forces them to pay and eventually reduce that mortgage and you can build wealth. Whereas if they're renting, they just spend the excess money they have. And that's pretty normal. That's pretty, that's been demonstrated over the years. So I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. Because I know human nature. I know how it works. And it really depends on location. And, of course, I'm now saying the study's wrong, right? Well, you can make things say almost anything you want. I could come up with a study to say almost anything I want. Depends on who I'm asking and where am I what I'm doing with the study. Tell them to do the study in San Francisco Bay Area and go back 50 years and say, well, would it have been smarter to rent or buy? I could tell you what the results would be. Here's an investing term you should know. What is a reverse stock split? Not a stock split, a reverse stock split. We haven't had many stock splits in the news because companies haven't been splitting their stocks. But what is a reverse stock split? Now, that's a corporate action in which a company reduces the total number of its outstanding shares. A reverse stock split involves a company dividing its current shares by a number such as 5 or 10, which we would call a 1 for 5 or 1 for 10 reverse stock split. A reverse split is the opposite of a conventional forward normal stock split. A reverse, obviously, which increases the number of shares. A normal stock split, 2 for 1, increases the number of shares, and 2 for 1 would double the number of shares and cut the price in half. Reverse stock split does the opposite. 1 for 2 would do just the opposite. Why would they reverse stock split? Why would they do that? Well, the New York Stock Exchange, the NASDAQ Exchange have rules that the stock price has to be a certain number. I think it's above $5 a share on the New York and 2 on the NASDAQ. Now, that might be out of date. That could be wrong. But if it falls below those numbers, they are required to bring it up. They give them time to do it, but they got to bring up the price. And one way to bring up the price is do a reverse stock split. A reverse stock split is usually looked on as a negative action, where a normal stock split is a positive action. So take it for what it is. Positive action meaning that, oh, it's a healthy company, the price has been going up, the earnings are going up, blah, blah, blah. Reverse stock split, oh, it's not a healthy company, their prices are falling to such a degree because of lack of earnings and things that they have to reverse stock split. Negative and positive. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Before the end of the hour, we're running out of time. We don't have a lot of time left, but we want to definitely get to how to find your passion in retirement, give you some concrete steps to get there. We do have time for a call or two calls if you want. So this is the time to do it. We're at the last portion of the program. I'm Steve Peasley. You're listening to Invest Talk. We have just a couple of minutes left, everybody, in the hour, so you can reach me now at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Trevor Spires. I'm a podcast listener from West Virginia. I've got a question about, I'm fairly early on in my investing life, and most of my investments are in index funds, and with a lot of that being in the S&P 500. I'm curious, are there any industries that you would consider to be essential that you do not get exposure to, or you get very little exposure to in the S&P 500? Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, emerging markets, growth outside the United States, it helps diversify your portfolio away from the U.S., and there's a much more, there's faster growth out there. So an S&P 500, even though they do have a lot of earnings coming from outside the United States, it still would not hurt to have an emerging market exposure in your portfolio on a long-term basis. And if that's if you want to be aggressive in the market. At a certain point, certain age, you may change your mind and you don't necessarily want to be in the market, then you have to change your whole outlook. But, you know, just having the S&P 500, I would say there's nothing wrong with that, of course, but you may want to diversify a little bit away from the United States and, go to emerging markets. You can also go to, you can be more specific if you like a certain country that you think is going to do well, you know, or maybe just the EU, European Union, is finally starting to grow again. I'm not keen on the EU personally, but yeah, so there's where you would go if you wanted to get a little bit more exposure and away a little bit from the United States. And I'm not saying a lot, just, you know, no more than 10% or so, somewhere around that range, maybe 15, depending on your aggressiveness. So how to find your passion in retirement. This is an issue for a lot of us who are reaching retirement, getting into retirement, approaching retirement, and what are you going to do? Now, I've talked to people, a lot of people about this, and one of the things you do is you keep working. Now, you don't necessarily have to work at what you don't like doing. Maybe the job that you are in, you don't like it. Then to go do something you like to do. Or if you like what you're doing, you just don't want to work so many hours, find a way to work part-time. Many jobs you can, many you cannot. But there's also a good approach is to look at what you like. What are your interests? And write them down. What are your hobbies now while you're working? What do you like to do? You like to fish, golf? You like to garden? I don't know. Volunteer at the rec center? Whatever it is you like to do, can you do it more and would you enjoy doing it more? Maybe you want to go back to educate, increase your knowledge, go to school. Now, so the first step is figuring out, after you've done that, whether you can translate your interests into daily activities that will fulfill you and make you feel good about yourself. Now, you know, I have, for instance, I have 39 nieces and nephews. I think I've told everybody that before, and many grandnieces and nephews now, but I have no children. So I do a lot of things with my nieces and nephews. But I don't think if I ever retired, that would not be enough. So if you have grandchildren or nieces and nephews, you think, well, I'll just spend more time with them. That may not work out very well, because you can't spend a lot of time with them. They're in school. They got their old parents to, you know, that's not happening. You know, and it may not be a good thing, a healthy thing, for a grandparent or uncle or aunt to get involved with their grandchildren or their nieces and nephews' life too deeply. Parents, well, might resent that. So you got to take that with a little bit of grain of salt. But the first job is to try to figure out what is your interest. What do you want to do? What's your interest now? I like going fishing myself, and I don't hardly go because I don't have any time. But if I retired, I definitely would pick that up. I would definitely do that more. That kind of thing. Time to wrap it up, everybody. If you have a 401k that's kind of disappointing, what's your action plan to tune it up? What do you want to do? You can take a look at our program called Active 401k. It may be just what you need. Very interesting. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Justin Klein and I thank you for being with us today. On behalf of the whole KPP family, I want to thank you for being part of the program. And let's do it again on Monday.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.